Today, on All Things Apostolic, I'm going to be introducing something we're going to be talking about maybe for a long time. It is so interesting, at least to me, and I think it will be to you, especially if you're Apostolic Pentecostal, or maybe even if you're not. So stay with us. Okay, I want to greet you today on this 17th day of February, 2025. And thank you for stopping by or becoming a part of or listening in or viewing All Things Apostolic. And we're glad that you're here. I want to say at the very outset, if you have friends that are interested in an in-depth discussion of Apostolic Pentecostalism, its present state, what its near future looks like, the issues and challenges which it faces, all of these things, then I would encourage you to call them and tell them to tune in, because we are going to be talking about these things, and we certainly won't get to all of them in one podcast. So All Things Apostolic on Mondays with myself. This is what we're going to be doing for I don't know how long it's going to take. When I started this out, I was going to do one podcast, and I'll tell you about it in just a moment, on a subject that it opened the door into the bigger need. Two things opened that door. This is one of them. It opened the door into a bigger need. And so one of the things that I was going to do is was to do a podcast today on answering the question, is secular music okay for apostolic Christians to listen to? And this wasn't original with me. It came from a podcast that somebody sent me the other day. It was a podcast in which a good brother with whom I have a long and positive relationship, Brother David Bernard, who is the General Superintendent of the United Pentecostal Church, he was asked this question on a recent podcast, and I listened to his answer and became aware that, at least in my mind, embodied in this question was many larger questions, that it really wasn't just about music. And now he did a good job of talking about the music. Now, I didn't agree with all of it, but he would understand that. And so I was going to just talk about that and the implications of what we think about the subject of secular music, and how that it's not just about secular music, it's about a lot of other things. Well, those other things just kept growing and growing and growing until it dawned on me that we, at least this is my opinion, we need a very broad-based, lengthy, somewhat in-depth discussion of Apostolic Pentecostalism in the 21st century. And really, that's where we're going here, to talk about all of these things, and that the source of this discussion is the changes that have come with what is commonly called postmodernism. Postmodernism being the 21st century. And the changes that have come, and they're real. And there were a couple of men in particular that wrote about this. And in the end of the 20th century, they wrote about what was coming in the 21st century. And they had uncanny insight into what was coming. Now, how they developed that insight, I don't know. I haven't investigated that. But they had uncanny insight, and now we're 25 years into the 21st century. And the things they said are, it's not eerie, but it is pretty amazing, the accuracy with which they spoke. And the way they knew that, they weren't prophets, but they weren't even Christians, that I know of. One of them, I'm sure, was not a Christian, but it's not that they were prophets. It was that they had studied trends and studied society and all of the social issues, and they had studied the direction in which education's going. And they, so all these elements, these component pieces, they had studied, and they were pretty accurate so far, pretty accurate. So when I looked at all of that, then I got to thinking about, first, we need to identify the changing times in which we live, that is identified as postmodernism, and the impact that such is having on the church. Because that's having an impact on the church, there's no question. And that impact is very, very significant. It's very significant on the Apostolic Pentecostal Church. So to the point that we have more than one organization today in the apostolic movement, and it's primarily because of things that occurred moving into the 21st century. These are things that probably none of us have the full answers to. So for all of us to assume that, well, I've got all these answers, would be kind of a sophomoric approach to the whole subject. However, for us to understand, this is not a political argument, and this is not something that we can overlook. This is something that is affecting us and is going to dramatically affect, it's already affecting, it's going to dramatically affect the Apostolic Church in the months and years to come. The effect on it right now is twofold. Primarily, we are in a declining stage. I'll talk about this, but in what ways? Well, in many ways. We are in a declining stage. And in other ways, we don't know everything that the future holds. So we have to prepare based on the Word. We have to prepare based on what we know in the Word. And in that way, I think there's efforts to do that. And our efforts have to be sped up. Now, I know there's people that say, well, I remember what it was like, you know, when my dad was a boy or young preacher. And I remember, and I just want to live my life like that in this peaceful area. I don't want no pressure put on me. I don't want, well, I my response to that would be is that you're just ignorant of what's going on. And that doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means you don't realize the urgency of the hour. And also you can make the mistake of cocooning and thinking that your cocoon, where you have peace in this limited area, you can think that your cocoon is going to be enough to hold you. But it won't. The cocoons are going to be invaded. And if we're not prepared for it as leaders, then the people are going to suffer. It's already started. So anyway, we're going to try to get into that a little bit. And I'm trying to think of what else I should say before we really proceed here. So the other thing, two things that made me realize that the door opened in my mind to understand, this is a much broader scale. One was the question, is secular music okay for apostolic Christians? And the concluding answer, by the way, with Brother Bernard was that it is okay. But he was careful to couch that in cautions that not all secular music is okay, nothing that is licentious or so forth. So anyway, you can hear it. I'm sure it's on the internet somewhere. But my immediate impulse was to give further discussion to that question. The question is unconsciously on the part of the moderator that asked the question was a young man that just was the moderator. But I don't know if he recognized or not. But the question was really a trap door, which opened up and exposed the viewer to the bright light of which much bigger content than the question includes. So maybe we ought to thank him for asking the question, because the question opens up content far, far, far beyond the immediate subject of music. You say, well, how would music be such an important subject? Well, everything that has to do with culture, everything that has to do with what is included in or excluded from any Christian's culture is an important question. And some of them have a great deal of opaqueness. They are, there's a great deal of shades of things. And so you can't just always give a straightforward answer on everything without giving other stuff with that, which of course was attempted on a high scale. So the other thing is that the answer to the question encompasses so much more than just what the question was about. And I hope that we understand that this is only one facet of the world in which we live. These are the things that need to be dealt with. Now, I don't just sit around thinking of things to disagree with, nor do I have certain people whom I want to show something. But I think that probably, sometimes to my own harm, we also don't sit around and try to think of dramatic ways to build an audience. In fact, I never even check the audience numbers. I don't, just whoever's listening is listening. So, but these issues now that this popped open a really big issue. And the issue is much broader. So we're going to talk about that. So I hope that you will stay with us. I hope you'll call your friends. I hope that, you know, you'll get involved. The second thing that made me decide that we needed to do this, or that opened the door that I just looked out there and recognized through this open door that, oh my Lord, there's all this stuff laying out there that needs to be discussed among Apostolic Pentecostals and Christians in general and anybody else that wants to listen in. And one of the other things that brought that to my attention is that I am developing, along with some other fine scholars that truly are scholars, great scholars, we are developing an eschatology course for the master's program at Wilson University. We're developing a whole master's degree. We've had a master's degree, but it's antiquated, and we're not going to use that. We're developing a whole new master's degree. It's going to be incredible. If you're thinking about a master's degree, this master's degree will actually kick off in January of 2026. So that's 11 months, 10 and a half months away. It will be introduced and it will be available. Anyway, in that, one of the courses it has is eschatology. And thinking about the eschatology subject, it made me have to go back and go into the teachings of other mainline, old line, I guess you would call it, old line denominations, and what they taught all the way back from John Calvin, and even before that, back to Martin Luther, and even back to Thomas Aquinas, and on back. And in doing that, in having to get into all of that, I recognized, and here's the core of what we're going to be doing. Here's the core of it. I recognized that there needs to be created a line on every possible issue, a line that gives distinction to what Apostolic Pentecostals believe theologically and what others believe and why we're not just there. Because those groups existed at least institutionally before an Apostolic Pentecostal movement did. So why aren't we, if they have revelation, why aren't we just part of of them? Well, because we think there's further revelation. We don't think we know there's further revelation. But how you get that revelation is pretty radically different than the limited, I would say, way that you can receive revelation, as have groups that are not apostolic Pentecostal. So we run into this. I have people that have used quotes out of my books in their theological dissertations for their doctorates, in which the professor said, "I know this may be one of your, at least in your mind, primary theologians, but you would find that," in this case he was talking about Reformed theology, "you would find that Reformed theology is much different than Apostolic Pentecostal theology, which is what we are." And so how is it different? And how are we different from the people that Presbyterian theology, for example? How are we different from that? And so increasingly in 2025, I think these things are not only interesting, I think these things are extremely important. And we are going to be looking at them in a way that we previously have not looked at them. Now, before I leave, last week, I read a little quote that it's out of one of my books, but a similar quote is in the introduction to the Premier Study Bible, and there's several things here that we could get into, but I'm only going to use this. There's four premises that the great scores of people work to present and produce the Premier Study Bible. And there was four premises, primary premises, upon which biblical interpretation and theological understanding is based. There's more than that, but these four were primary. And here it is. A third premise is that the church, as seen in the New Testament, is the church at its finest, most mature, most pristine, and highest earthly perfection. No later version of the church, whether in dynamic or doctrine, in power or polity, supersedes this pristine maturity from infancy of the New Testament church. Like Adam, the church was divinely breathed into and created immediately mature and complete. It is thus the sole model for all ages, both in doctrine and action, neither of which have been divinely altered at any time in the church age, nor can they be improved. The journey of the church back to itself can be observed by the centuries of restorationist progress towards return to the only sure model, that is, the New Testament. Everything essential to the definition of the church as the church is found in the Bible. Likewise, every gift of grace and power provided to the original church remains available for the church in the present and will so remain until the end of the age. That's an apostolic Pentecostal theological premise. And we believe that. And so what we want to do in the ensuing weeks here is we want to take that, and that's the template that we believe, and we want to place other beliefs, that some of them which are radically hostile to that vision. I'm going to place it against it. Let's figure out what's right. All right? We're glad you're with us. Call your friends. If you have apostolic friends in particular, call your friends. We're going to have a great time together in the next few weeks.